Brad is on the line. Hey, Brad, how you doing?
I am.
You are, too. I'm glad you are. Is. Am. Because otherwise you wouldn't be very interesting to talk to.
That's true.
Yeah. Something to remember, Being Jesus, Part 15. Ooh, an ominous, dire warning in this article. Kind of scary. The reality of it is very clear and intimate to me, and I sure hope that our readers and listeners can clearly understand what you're communicating. There's something to remember. It's a very serious thing. You've got it boiled down to just one line, one sentence that stands all by itself. You'll be unpopular, and it'll translate into hatred. Wow. Have you experienced that?
Who, me?
Yeah. Have you experienced being unpopular and hated because of your religious views?
I think you could say that.
Yeah, death threats?
Well, yeah, that too.
And warnings and accusations and name-calling? You've gone through that too?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. So, where do you think all that comes from? I mean, it can't be from the same guys who persecuted Jesus. They're long gone, right?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I think the same spirits that were in those guys are in the same crew today that doesn't like Jesus.
Well, now there's the kicker, isn't it? That's the curveball in what you're saying. Because I think a lot of people attribute the unpopularity and hatred to the humans that were manifesting it or being used by it, rather than recognizing the fact that they are being used by spirit agents directly, on purpose, just as they are today. And those spirit agents don't die or didn't die or whatever you want to say. They're still here.
Yep.
And they don't want change any more than they wanted it 2,000 years ago.
Nope.
Why do you think that is?
Well, if they are agents of the one Jesus called our enemy, they're doing the work of destruction. I know you modify that in some of your thinking and call him the challenger, which, and I understand your perspective, and I even agree with it. I think it's a wonderful perspective, but nonetheless, ultimately, if we're going to believe what Jesus said, it was that he had just one mindset, and that's destroy these bodies that we occupy and to steal our faith.
Well, then I want to rebut what you just said. You know, who Jesus was referring to as the enemy was not necessarily Satan or the challenger.
And that's okay.
I think that that's a generalization that has manifested out of the mythical devil mentality and hell mentality that Christianity has produced, which is mythical. And we just lump any negative comments that Jesus made, dump it all into one guy, and we call him the devil. We call him Satan. We call him, and that's just not true. It's not true whatsoever. So the enemy, who is the enemy? Well, the enemy is the spirit that resists this change, this knowing, this understanding, this relationship that Jesus is promoting. Whether it be Satan, or whom I refer to as the challenger, or agents associated with him, or someone else. Who knows? We know so little.
With that, I agree. I can only deal or come from my own experience. And funny, because you said we had death threats, and when you have some little old lady, I mean, she was in her 60s, and here I'm almost 80, and I'm referring to her as a little and old, but this big male voice comes out and says, "I'm going to kill you," to me, you know. Well, whatever you want to call it, it wasn't friendly, and it sure had her screwed up. And, you know, people who haven't had the experience prefer not to even believe it. And I understand that. Who wants to believe in that stuff? It used to scare the dickens out of me until I understood my authority to handle it and deal with it. But you rightly, to me, have just said, we don't know. I don't understand all that goes on, and I really don't even understand the source of it. I just know that there is a force out there that's out to get human beings who want to move towards what they call God, and that force does whatever it can. And why get into an argument about who or what, or because you're not going to prove it.
I agree. Right.
But I'll tell you one thing. If you start dabbling in it, you better know what the heck you're doing, or you might be in for some very unpleasant surprises.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. So I think we're clear now on where the hatred really comes from, and it's not necessarily from the individual, because let's be honest with each other. Who wouldn't want... What human being wouldn't want more love, more relationship, more of God's presence and power if they were actually aware that that was an opportunity that they could have? I just don't believe that anybody would truly want that. And anybody who doesn't is probably being interfered with in some way, shape, or form, or has been in the past. But let's move on. You make a statement in here that says, and I'm going to quote you if you don't mind, some of the things Jesus said he hated, in which are exactly things Christianity at large practices. Can you just give me an example of that? What Jesus hated that Christianity at large practices?
Well, one of the things that he's very explicit in, he said, and this is in your favor, that you hate the practices of the Nicolaitans, and the Nicolaitans, meaning Nico, which is control over, and then Laitans is where we get the word laity. It means control over the common men, the separation that Christianity has done by having leaders and leadership and having all kinds of names attached to those leaders. He said he hated that. And I've kind of expanded on that and, like, for example, go to what he said in Matthew, or what Matthew quoted him as saying or purported that he said. I'm not making any, what's the word I want to put it? I'm not making any great statements of accuracy related to that. It's what one man remembered, and it seems to be at some variance with other men who remembered what Jesus said. But, he said, don't let anybody call you by any title that would imply spiritual superiority or spiritual authority. You're all to be brothers. You're all to be just equal, just as... the same kind of equal as siblings, brothers and sisters. And good night, what has Christianity done? What did the early church, which so many Christians hold up as the ideal to pursue, start? With everything from bishops and fathers and, apostles and all that kind of stuff. Doesn't seem to be the kind of equality that at least Matthew remembered. The other thing Jesus said in that same arena, it's around the 22nd, 23rd chapter of Matthew, was he really had a, I'm going to use it, I'll use it, that's all right, you people are grown up enough, we're listening to this, he really had a hard-on for public prayer, so don't do it. And yet, what do Christians do when they get together, I think you and I have talked about, I don't think ever on a podcast, but we both have had experiences with guys who insist on praying out loud for a meal in some crowded restaurant, Jesus said, don't do that.
Yeah.
And so, but Christianity almost makes it a hallmark to do that. I'm sorry, I'm rambling on about nothing here, but that's a couple things that come to mind that of things he didn't like.
You know, it's funny because one of the things just above that is that some of the actions or being Jesus, the response that we were talking about earlier is hatred, and here now we have Jesus hating things too. And so I'm going to ask you, well, what's the difference?
Are you trying to bait me?
Well, is this a paradox or what?
I go back to a story I tell, a true story of a couple of women that had heard about a meeting from some friend of theirs and showed up at my office, and it was one of the women I knew from, you know, years before, and I'm trying to think of her name, not that it's important, but Rochelle. I remember, you know, she burst out, "Brad Cullen, you know, I should have known it was you." Well, they, you know, it came to my door, and I, in my office, and it was a surprise visit, and they both had Bibles in their hands, and my first reaction was, "Oh no, here we go." Pardon?
That's funny.
Yeah, so anyway, I invited them into my little conference room off to the side, and I had the easel and the flip chart that was still there from the night before with black ink, and I still remember I had written on it, "Jesus hates," and I'd written this list of stuff underneath of "Jesus hates," and I don't remember this other gal's name, but Rochelle's friend, she says, "Oh no. Jesus doesn't hate. Jesus is all love." And so I just said, well, then Rochelle interrupted her. She said, "Well, maybe you ought to hear what Brad has to say about that." And I just pointed to their Bibles and said, "Why don't we take a look at the second chapter of Revelation, where Jesus goes through a list of things that he has against them for what they've done." And then he said, but I have this in your favor, that you hate the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I hate also. And the Nicolaitans is a perfect model of what modern day Christianity is, which is a separation of people into two groups. One, the leadership, and the other, the sheep or the led, so to speak. And that's something that people don't even see or can't even receive almost until they come out. When they come away from the organized church, then they can see it clearly. But until then, it's just like they got a shroud over their head, you know? That this whore, this harlot, called the church is wonderful and nice, you know? When Jesus said, "Get away from it."
On top of that, you know, get away from it. The whole concept of Christianity today is about being a nice guy. It seems.
Yeah, like you and I are nice, right?
Sure. Yeah, we're nice. We don't ever do anything that offends anybody, and we treat everybody with love and respect, 24 hours a day, 700 days a year. You know what I mean? It's ludicrous. It's standards that they can't be lived up to, and there's demonstrably instances in the dialogue of Jesus' time where he wasn't Mr. Nice Guy at all.
No, he told the religious of his day that they were a bunch of whitewashed tombstones. They were dead.
Yeah. Pretty strong words. Really strong words. So, anyway, let's move on. I've got one more thing here that really jumped out to me when I was reading your article. And it's in the last paragraph. "The resident power within you can neither be taught nor learned, but must be acquired." Wow, acquired. And then you continue on in that paragraph saying that if you're saying your ministry or talking about your ministry, then you haven't acquired the it that needs to be acquired. Well, what needs to be, how do we acquire this? I know I'm probably leading you into being redundant again and repeating what you have said over and over and over again, but it begs to me to be said again. How do we acquire this resident power? This is important.
I think it boils down into one very specific thing that Jesus suggested, as Luke recalled it, and that Jesus used a metaphor that God, as a being a loving, I say, tongue-in-cheek, Jewish mother, father, an overindulgent parent who will give a kid anything he wants, and Jesus uses the metaphor in a way of a kid saying, "Daddy, I want," and then he gives it relief by saying, "You being parents who are less than perfect, if your kid asks you for a piece of bread, are you going to give him a rock? No, you're going to give him bread. Well, how much more then will your loving parent give anyone who continues to come after him and demand of him, will give him more of his own spirit?" And it's quantitative, more and more. And what hit me with that, for me, was, and I've seen other people break through, I've seen you break through in the same way, and that is, knock and seek, keep knocking, don't stop, but it's day after day. I wake up often, I still tell everybody, look, you think I'm a big paragon of faith, I start most days totally faithless. And it's not something that you learn and keep, or that you were told once, or you have this fabulous baptism in the Spirit where the Spirit of God overtakes you. Yes, that's all there and it's all available. But for me, daily, I have to acquire it, moment by moment. When you call me on the phone, I generally shudder because I think, oh, here we go again. You know, Daddy, then I start tapping. I don't know if you can, this is coming over the phone, but I'm slapping my hand on my desk. You know, I want more. I want more of your spirit. And miraculously, he gives it to us. He wants us to be filled with the Spirit. How much more of his spirit will your heavenly Father give to those who cry out day and night? And why is that missed? I don't understand it. To me, it's so simple.
It is simple. You're right. But if you don't have experience...
But there's your experience. If you don't have experience with it, and that was my whole point in Leapfrog, and that's why I get so excited about Leapfrog all the time, because I had an email just a couple days ago, you know. Another person got turned on to it, and wow, you know, this guy is saying he is experiencing and beginning to understand it. You know, his knuckles are getting sore by knocking, but God really wants us to have his spirit. Ah, yeah. And then tomorrow when you wake up all, and I hate to feed this because I know you've criticized me before about setting myself up for failure, but that's probably not what you said, but that when I say that I'm going to wake up without any faith, it's the way it is. I don't know anybody who has great faith day after day, because great faith is now. It's in the moment when the presence of God is upon me. How does the presence of God come upon me? By my inviting. I go back to something Jewish prophet Jeremiah said, "You will seek me and find me when you search for me." It's when, that's the operative word, when you search for me with all of your heart. Jesus said, you know, if you keep demanding, you'll have, if you demand until you get. Now, you found that to be true for you too, right?
Yeah, 100% true. Yeah. If you don't ask, you don't get. And if you don't continually ask, you lose. If you go backwards.
It's that simple.
Yeah, it has to be a daily practice. And I'm positive that Jesus, the man, didn't just pray once a day or just on Sunday. As a matter of fact, I remember there's a particular passage where he chastises his disciples for falling asleep while he's out there praying. He's going, okay, fine, you can't stay up and pray with me. Well, at least stay awake. At least cover my back, will you, so that I can focus on my prayer.
Yeah. Now, this is God in the flesh who has to pray this way in order to be this way. Why is that so hard to get?
Because it's work, and I don't want work, and you don't want work, and everybody wants to just have things handed to them.
Well, you know, Ryan, I can't stand myself in the natural. You know, I'm a pretty obnoxious guy. I have a tendency to get stupidly angry and stupidly defensive and be stupidly arrogant. And there's only one way I want to live this life, and that's in the presence and power of the Source. And He has given us His promise that it's available. So why do I want to live like a lukewarm, nothing idiot?
I don't know.
Well, I don't.
Sometimes you do.
Yes, I know. You've caught me.
More often than not.
Yes.
You don't. And the same goes for me, too. I don't want to, but I get caught in my own trap. So, yeah. Brad, thanks so much. Great article. It's a short one, but we seem to have turned it into a fairly long dialogue, and I hope our listeners appreciate what you had to say. I expect they will.
Well, Ryan, per usual, thank you for the call. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, talk to you again. Next article. Bye, Brad.
All right.